pounding from that one peal, mixing together like many conversations overheard in a crowd. Sabriel rang the bell again before the echoes died, in a series of slight wrist twitches, moving the sound out towards the dead creature, weaving into the echoes of the first peal. Sound seemed to envelop the monster, circling around its head and muted mouth. The echoes faded. Sabriel replaced Dairim quickly, before it could try and sound of its own accord, and drew Ranna. The sleeper could quell a large number of dead at once, and she feared many would come to the sound of the bells. They would probably expect to find a foolish, half-trained necromancer, but even so they would be dangerous. Ranna twitched in her hand, expectantly, like a child waking at her touch. The creature's mouth moved again, and now it had a tongue, a horrid, pulpy mess of white flesh that writhed like a slug. But it worked. The thing made several gurgling, swallowing sounds. Then it spoke, with the voice of Ab Horsen.
"Sabriel, I both hoped and feared you would come."
"Father," Sabriel began, looking at his trapped spirit, rather than the creature.
"Father!"
She broke down and started to cry. She had come all this way, through so many troubles, only to find him trapped. Trapped beyond her ability to free him. She hadn't even known that it was possible to imprison someone within a gate.
"Sabriel, hush, daughter. We have no time for tears. Where is your physical body?"
"In the reservoir," sniffed Sabriel. "Next to yours, inside a diamond of protection."
"And the dead? Kerrigor?"
"There was no sign of them there, but Kerrigor is somewhere in life. I don't know where."
"Yes, I knew he had emerged," muttered Ab Horsen via the thing's mouth. "He will be near the reservoir, I fear. We must move quickly. Sabriel, do you remember how to ring two bells simultaneously, Mosrael and Kibbeth?"
"Two bells?" asked Sabriel, puzzled. "Waker and Walker at the same time?" She had never even heard it was possible. Or had she?
"Think," said Ab Horsen's mouthpiece. "Remember, the Book of the Dead."
Slowly it came back, pages floating down into conscious memory, like leaves from a shaken tree. The bells could be rung in pairs, or even greater combinations, if enough necromancers were gathered to wield the bells. But the risks were much greater.
"Yes," said Sabriel slowly. "I remember. Mosrael and Kibbeth. Will they free you?"
The answer was slow in coming.
"Yes. For a time. Enough, I hope, to do what must be done. Quickly now."
Sabriel nodded, trying not to think about what he had just said. Subconsciously, she had always been aware that Ab Horsen's spirit had been too long from his body, and too deep in the realm of death. He could never truly live again. Consciously, she chose to barricade this knowledge from her mind. She sheathed her sword, replaced Ranna, and drew Mosrael and Kibbeth. Dangerous spells, both, and more so in combination than alone. She stilled her mind, emptying herself of all thought and emotion, concentrating solely on the bells. Then she rang them. Mosrael, she swung in a three-quarter circle above her head. Kibbeth, she swung in a reverse figure eight. Harsh alarm, joined with dancing jig, merging into a discordant, grating, but energetic tone. Sabriel found herself walking towards the waterfall, despite all her efforts to keep still. A force like the grip of a demented giant moved her legs, bent her knees, made her step forward. At the same time, her father was emerging from the waterfall of the fourth gate. His head was freed first, and he flexed his neck, then rolled his shoulders, raised his arms over his head, and stretched. But still Sabriel stepped on, till she was only two paces from the rim, and could look down into the swirling waters. The sound of the bells filling her ears, forcing her onwards. Then Ab Horsen was free, and he leapt forward, thrusting his hands into the bell mouths, gripping the clappers with his pallid hands, making them suddenly quiet. There was silence, and father and daughter embraced on the very brink of the fourth gate.
"Well done," said Abhorsen,
his voice deep and familiar, lending comfort and warmth like a favourite childhood toy.
"Once trapped, it was all I could do to send the bells and sword. Now I'm afraid we must hurry, back to life, before Kerrigor can complete his plan. Give me Saraneth for now. No, you keep the sword, and Runner, I think. Come on."
He led the way back, walking swiftly. Sabriel followed at his heels, questions bursting up in her. She kept looking at him, looking at the familiar features, the way his hair was ragged at the back, the silver stubble just showing on his chin and sideburns. He wore the same sort of clothes as she did, complete with the surcoat of silver keys. He wasn't quite as tall as she remembered.
"Father!"
she exclaimed, trying to talk, keep up with him, and keep watch all at the same time.
"What is happening? What is Kerrigor's plan? I don't understand. Why wasn't I brought up here so I would know things?"
"Here?" asked Abhorsen, without slowing. "In death?"
"You know what I mean," protested Sabriel. "The old kingdom. Why did... I mean, I must be the only Abhorsen ever who doesn't have a clue about how everything works. Why? Why?"
"There's no simple answer," replied Abhorsen over his shoulder. "But I sent you to Anselstier for two main reasons. One was to keep you safe. I had already lost your mother, and the only way to keep you safe in the Old Kingdom was to keep you either with me or always at our house, practically a prisoner. I couldn't keep you with me, because things were getting worse and worse since the death of the regent 2 years before you were born. The second reason was because the Clare advised me to do so. They said we needed someone, or will need someone, they're not good with time, who knows Anselstier. I didn't know why then, but I suspect I do now."
"Why?"
asked Sabriel.
"Kerrigor's body," replied Abhorsen. "Or Rogier's, to give him his original name. He could never be made truly dead, because his body is preserved by free magic somewhere in life. It's like an anchor that always brings him back. Every Abhorsen since the breaking of the Great Stones has been looking for that body, but none of us ever found it, including me, because we never suspected it is in Anselstier, obviously somewhere close to the wall. The Clare will have located it by now, because Kerrigor must have gone to it when he emerged into life. Right, do you want to do the spell, or shall I?"
They had reached the third gate. He didn't wait for her answer, but immediately spoke the words. Sabriel felt strange hearing them, rather than speaking them, curiously distant, like a far-off observer. Steps rose before them, cutting through the waterfall and the mist. Abhorsen took them two at a time, showing surprising energy. Sabriel followed as best she could. She felt tiredness in her bones now, a weariness beyond exhausted muscles.
"Ready to run?" asked Abhorsen.
He took her elbow as they left the steps and went into the parted mists. A curiously formal gesture that reminded her of when she was a little girl, demanding to be properly escorted when they took a picnic basket out on one of her father's corporeal school visitations. They ran before the wave, with hands inside the bells, faster and faster, till Sabriel thought her legs would seize up and she'd tumble head over heels around and around and around, finally clattering to a halt in a tangle of sword and bells. But she made it somehow. Abhorsen chanting the spell that would open the base of the second gate, so they could ascend through the whirlpool.
"As I was saying," Abhorsen continued, taking these steps two at a time as well, speaking as swiftly as he climbed, "Kerrigor could never be properly dealt with till an Abhorsen found the body. All of us pushed him back at various times, as far back as the seventh gate, but that was merely postponing the problem. He grew stronger all the time, as lesser charter stones were broken, and the kingdom deteriorated, and we grew weaker.
Who's we? Asked Sabriel. All this information was coming too quickly, particularly when given at the run.
The Great Charter Bloodlines, replied Abhorsen, which to all intents and purposes means Abhorsens and the Clare, since the royal line is all but extinct. And there is, of course, the relict of the Wallmakers, a sort of construct left over after they put their powers in the wall and the great stones.
He left the rim of the whirlpool and strode confidently out into the second precinct, Sabriel close at his heels. Unlike her earlier halting, probing advance, Abhorsen practically jogged along, obviously following a familiar route. How he could tell, without landmarks or any obvious signs, Sabriel had no idea. Perhaps, when she had spent 30-odd years traversing death, she would find it as easy.
So, continued Abhorsen, we finally have the chance to finish Kerrigor once and for all. The Clare will direct you to his body, you will destroy it, and then banish Kerrigor's spirit form, which will be severely weakened. After that, you can get the surviving royal prince out of his suspended state, and with the aid of the Wallmaker relict, repair the great charter stones.
The surviving royal prince? Asked Sabriel,
with a feeling of unlooked-for knowledge rising in her.
He wasn't, suspended as a figurehead in Whole Hallow, was he? And his spirit in death?
A bastard son, actually, and possibly crazy, Abhorsen said without really listening. But he has the blood.
What?
Oh, yes, yes, he is. You said was. You mean...
Yes, said Sabriel unhappily.
He calls himself Touchstone, and he's waiting in the reservoir near the stones with Mogget.
Abhorsen paused for the first time, clearly taken aback.
All our plans go astray, it seems, he said somberly, sighing. Kerrigor lured me to the reservoir to use my blood to break a great stone, but I managed to protect myself, so he contented himself with trapping me in death. He thought you would be lured to my body, and he could use your blood, but I was not trapped as securely as he thought, and planned the reverse. But now, if the prince is there, he has another source of blood to break the Great Charter.
He's in the Diamond of Protection, Sabriel said, suddenly feeling afraid for Touchstone.
That may not suffice, replied Abhorsen grimly. Kerrigor grows stronger every day he spends in life, taking the strength from living folk and feeding off the broken stones. He will soon be able to break even the strongest charter magic defenses. He may be strong enough now. But tell me of the prince's companion. Who is Mogget?
Mogget? Repeated Sabriel, surprised again. But I met him at our house. He's a free magic something, wearing the shape of a white cat, with a red collar that carries a miniature Saraneth.
Mogget, said Abhorsen, as if trying to get his mouth around an unpalatable morsel. That is the Wallmaker relict, or their last creation, or their child. No one knows, possibly not even him. I wonder why he took the shape of a cat. He was always a sort of albino dwarf boy to me, and he practically never left the house. I suppose he may be some sort of protection for the prince. We must hurry.
I thought we were, snapped Sabriel, as he started off again.
She didn't mean to be bad-tempered, but this was not her idea of a heartfelt reunion between father and daughter. He hardly seemed to notice her, except as a repository for numerous revelations, and as an agent to deal with Kerrigor. Abhorsen suddenly stopped, and gathered her into a quick, one-armed embrace. His grip felt strong, but Sabriel felt another reality there, as if his arm was a shadow, temporarily born of light, but doomed to fade at nightfall.
I have not been an ideal parent, I know, Abhorsen said quietly. None of us ever are. When we become the Abhorsen, we lose much else. Responsibility to many people rides roughshod over personal responsibilities. Difficulties and enemies crush out softness. Our horizons narrow. You are my daughter, and I have always loved you. But now, I live again for only a short time, 100 heartbeats, no more. And I must win a battle against the terrible enemy. Our parts now, which perforce we must play, are not father and daughter, but one old Abhorsen making way for the new. But behind this, there is always my love. 100 heartbeats, whispered Sabriel, tears falling down her face. She gently pushed herself out of his embrace, and they started forward together, towards the first gate, the first precinct, life, and then the reservoir. Chapter 23. Touchstone could see the dead now, and had no difficulty hearing them. They were chanting and clapping, decayed hands meeting together in a steady, slow rhythm that put all the hair on the back of his head on edge. A ghastly noise, hard sounds of bone on bone, or the liquid thumpings of decomposed, jellying flesh. The chanting was even worse, for very few of them had functioning mouths. Touchstone had never seen or heard a shipwreck. Now he knew the sound of 1,000 sailors drowning, all at once, in a quiet sea. The lines of the dead had marched out close to where Touchstone stood, forming a great mass of shifting shadow, spread like a choking fungus around the columns. Touchstone couldn't make out what they were doing, till Mogget, with his night sight, explained.
"They're forming up into two lines to make a corridor," the little cat whispered, though the need for silence was long gone. "A corridor of dead hands reaching from the northern stair to us."
"Can you see the doorway of the stair?" Touchstone asked. He was no longer afraid. Now he could see and smell the putrescent, stinking corpses lined up in mockery of a parade. "I should have died in this reservoir long ago," he thought. "There has just been a delay of 200 years.
"Yes, I can," continued Mogget, his eyes green with sparkling fire. "A tall beast has come, its flesh boiling with dirty flames, a mordicant. It's crouching in the water, looking back and up like a dog to its master. Fog is rolling down the stairs behind it, a free magic trick, that one. I wonder why he has such an urge to impress."
"Roger always was flamboyant," Touchstone stated, as if he might be commenting on someone at a dinner party. "He liked everyone to be looking at him. He's no different as Kerrigor, no different dead."
"Oh, but he is," said Mogget, "very different. He knows you are here, and the fog's for vanity. He must have been terribly rushed making the body he wears now. A vain man, even a dead one, would not like this body looked at."
Touchstone swallowed, trying not to think about that. He wondered if he could charge out of the diamond, flesh with his swords into that fog, a mad attack. But even if he got there, would his swords, charter-spelled though they were, have any effect on the magical flesh Kerrigor now wore? Something moved in the water, at the limits of his vision, and the hands increased the tempo of their drumming, the frenzied gurgle chanting rising in volume. Touchstone squinted, confirming what he thought he'd seen. Tendrils of fog, lazily drifting across the water between the lines of the dead, keeping to the corridor they'd made.
"He's playing with us," gasped Touchstone, surprised by his own lack of breath for speech.
He felt like he'd already sprinted a mile, his heart going thump, 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 thump. A terrible howl suddenly rose above the dead drumming, and Touchstone leapt back, nearly dislodging Mogget. The howl rose and rose, becoming unbearable, and then a huge shape broke out of the fog and darkness, stampeding towards them with fearful power, great swaths of spray exploding around it as it ran. Touchstone shouted or screamed. He wasn't sure, threw away his candle, drew his left sword, and thrust both blades out, crouching to receive the charge, knees so bent he was chest deep in the water.
"The Mordicant!"
yelled Mogget. Then he was gone, leaping from Touchstone to the still frosted Sabriel. Touchstone barely had time to absorb this information, and a split-second image of something like an enormous flame-shrouded bear, howling like the final scream of a sacrifice. Then the Mordicant collided with the Diamond of Protection and Touchstone's out-thrust swords. Silver sparks exploded with a bang that drowned the howling, throwing both Touchstone and the Mordicant back several yards. Touchstone lost his footing and went under, water bubbling into his nose and still screaming mouth. He panicked, thinking the Mordicant would be on him in a second, and flipped himself back up with unnecessary force, savagely ripping his stomach muscles. He almost flew out of the water, swords at guard again, but the diamond was intact, and the Mordicant retreating, backing away along the corridor of hands. They'd stopped their noise, but there was something else. Something Touchstone didn't recognize, till the water drained out of his ears. It was laughter. Laughter echoing out of the fog, which now billowed across the water, coming closer and closer, till the retreating Mordicant was enveloped in it and lost to sight.
"Did my hound scare you, little brother?" said a voice from within the fog.
"Ow!"
exclaimed Sabriel, feeling Mogget's claws on her physical body. Abhorsen looked at her, raising one silvery eyebrow questioningly.
"Something touched my body in life," she explained. "Mogget, I think. I wonder what's happening."
They stood at the very edge of death, on the border with life. No dead had tried to stop them, and they'd passed easily through the first gate. Perhaps any dead would quail from the sight of two Abhorsens. Now they waited. Sabriel didn't know why. Somehow, Abhorsen seemed to be able to see into life, or to work out what was happening. He stood like an eavesdropper, body slightly bent, ear cocked to a non-existent door. Sabriel, on the other hand, stood like a soldier, keeping watch for the dead. The broken stones made this part of death an attractive highroad into life, and she had expected to find many dead here, trying to take advantage of the hole, but it was not so. They seemed to be alone in the grey, featureless river, their only neighbours the swells and eddies of the water. Abhorsen closed his eyes, concentrating even harder, then opened them to a wide-eyed stare, and touched Sabriel lightly on the arm.
"It is almost time," he said gently. "When we emerge, I want you to take Touchstone and run for the southern stairs. Do not stop for anything, anything at all. Once outside, climb up to the top of the palace hill to the west yard. It's just an empty field now. Touchstone will know how to get there. If the Clare are watching properly and haven't got their wens mixed up, there'll be a paper wing there."
"A paper wing?" interrupted Sabriel. "But I crashed it."
"There are several around," replied Abhorsen. "The Abhorsen who made it, the 46th, I think, taught several others how to construct them. Anyway, it should be there. The Clare will also be there, or a messenger, to tell you where to find Kerrigor's body in Anselstier. Fly as close to the wall as possible, cross, find the body, and destroy it."
"What will you be doing?"
whispered Sabriel.
"Here is Saraneth," replied Abhorsen, not meeting her gaze. "Give me your sword, and Astarael."
The seventh bell. Astarael, the sorrowful. Weeper. Sabriel didn't move, made no motion to hand over bell or blade. Abhorsen pushed Saraneth into its pouch and did up the strap. He started to undo the strap that held Astarael, but Sabriel's hand closed on his, gripping it tightly.
"There must be another way," she cried. "We can all escape together."
"No," said Abhorsen firmly.
He gently pushed her hand away. Sabriel let go, and he took Astarael carefully from the bandolier,
making sure it couldn't sound. Does the walker choose the path, or the path, the walker? Numbly, Sabriel handed him her sword, his sword. Her empty hands hung open by her sides. I have walked in death to the very precipice of the ninth gate, Apporson said quietly. I know the secrets and horrors of the nine precincts. I do not know what lies beyond, but everything that lives must go there in the proper time. That is the rule that governs our work as the Abhorsen, but it also governs us. You are the 53rd Abhorsen, Sabriel. I have not taught you as well as I should. Let this be my final lesson. Everyone and everything has a time to die. He bent forward and kissed her forehead just under the rim of her helmet. For a moment she stood like a stringed puppet at rest. Then she flung herself against his chest, feeling the soft fabric of his surcoat. She seemed to diminish in size, till once again she was a little girl, running to his embrace at the school gates. As she could then, she heard the slow beating of his heart. Only now she heard the beats as grains in a timepiece, counting his hard-won hundreds, counting till it was time for him to die. She hugged him tightly, her arms meeting around his back, his arms outstretched like a cross, sword in one hand, bell in the other. Then she let go. They turned together and plunged out into life. Kerrigo laughed again, an obscene cackle that rose to a manic crescendo before suddenly cutting to an ominous silence. The dead resumed their drumming, softer now, and the fog drifted forward with horrible certainty. Touchstone, drenched and partly drowned, watched it with the taut nerves of a mouse captivated by a gliding snake. Somewhere in the back of his mind, he noted that it was easier to see the whiteness of the fog. Up above, the clouds had gone, and the edges of the reservoir were once again lit by filtered sunlight. But they were 40 paces or more from the edge. A cracking noise behind him made him start and turn, a jolt of fear suddenly overlaid with relief. Sabriel and her father were returning to life. Ice flakes fell from them in miniature flurries, and the layer of ice around Abhorsen's middle broke into several small flows and drifted away. Touchstone blinked as the frost fell away from their hands and faces. Now Sabriel was empty-handed, and Abhorsen wielded the sword and bell. "Thank the Charter!" exclaimed Touchstone, as they opened their eyes and moved. But no one heard him, for in that instant a terrible scream of rage and fury burst out of the fog, so loud the column shivered and ripples burst out across the water. Touchstone turned again, and the fog was away in shreds, revealing the mordicant crouched low, only its eyes and long mouth bubbling with oily flames visible above the water. Behind it, with one elongated hand upon its bog-clay head, stood something that might be thought of as a man. Staring, Touchstone saw that Kerrigor had tried to make the body he currently inhabited look like the Rogier of old, but either his skills, memory, or taste was sadly lacking. Kerrigor stood at least 7 feet tall, his body impossibly deep-chested and narrow-waisted. His head was too thin and too long, and his mouth spread from ear to ear. His eyes did not bear looking at, for they were thin slits burning with free magic fires, not eyes at all. But somehow, even so warped, he did have a little of the look of Rogier. Take a man, make him malleable, stretch, and twist. The hideous mouth opened, yawning wider and wider. Then Kerrigor laughed, a short laugh, punctuated by the snap of his closing jaws. Then he spoke, and his voice was as warped and twisted as his body.
I am fortunate. 3 bearers of blood, blood for the breaking. Three!
Touchstone kept staring, hearing Kerrigor's voice, still somewhat like Rogier's, rich but rotten, wet like worm-ridden fruit. He saw both the new, twisted Kerrigor and the other, better-fashioned body he'd known as Rogier. He saw the dagger again slashing across the queen's throat, the blood cascading out, the golden cup. A hand grabbed him, turned him around, took his left sword from his grasp. He suddenly refocused, gasping for air again, and saw Sabriel. She had his left sword in her right hand, and now took his open palm in her left, dragging him towards the south. He let her pull, following in a splashing, loose-limbed run. Everything seemed to close in then, his vision narrowing, like a half-remembered dream. He saw Sabriel's father, the Abhorsen, for the first time devoid of frost. He looked hard, determined, but he smiled and bowed his head a fraction as they passed. Touchstone wondered why he was going the wrong way. Towards Kerrigor, towards the dagger and the catching cup. Mogget was on his shoulder, too, and that was unlike Mogget, going into danger. There was something else peculiar about Mogget, too. Yes, his collar was gone. Maybe he should turn and go back, put Mogget's collar back on, try and fight Kerrigor. "Run, damn you, run!" screamed Sabriel as he half-turned. Her voice snapped him out of whatever trance he'd been in. Nausea hit, for they'd left the diamond of protection. Unwarned, he threw up immediately, turning his head as they ran. He realized he was dragging on Sabriel's hand and forced himself to run faster, though his legs felt dead, numbed by savage pins and needles. He could hear the dead again now, chanting and drumming, drumming fast. There were voices, too, raised loud, echoing in the vast cavern. The howl of the mordicant, and a strange buzzing, crackling sound that he felt rather than heard. They reached the southern stair, but Sabriel didn't slacken her pace, jumping up and off, out of the twilight of the reservoir into total darkness. Touchstone lost her hand, then found it again, and they stumbled up the steps together, swords held dangerously ahead and behind, striking sparks from the stone. Still they heard the tumult from behind, the howling, drumming, shouting, all magnified by the water and the vastness of the reservoir. Then another sound began, cutting through the noise with the clarity of perfection. It started softly, like a tuning fork lightly struck, but grew, a pure note, blown by a trumpeter of inexhaustible breath, till there was nothing but the sound. The sound of Astarael. Sabriel and Touchstone both stopped, almost in mid-stride. They felt a terrible urge to leave their bodies, to shuck them off as so much worn-out baggage. Their spirits, their essential selves, wanted to go into death and plunge joyfully into the strongest current, to be carried to the very end. "Think of life!" screamed Sabriel, her voice only just audible through the pure note. She could feel Touchstone dying, his will insufficient to hold him in life. He seemed almost to expect this sudden summons into death. "Fight it!" she screamed again, dropping her sword to slap him across the face. "Live!" Still, he slipped away. Desperate, she grabbed him by the ears and kissed him savagely, biting his lip, the salty blood filling both their mouths. His eyes cleared, and she felt him concentrate again. Concentrate on life, on living. His sword fell, and he brought his arms up around her and returned her kiss. Then he put his head on her shoulder, and she on his, and they held each other tightly till the single note of Astarael slowly died. Silence came at last. Gingerly, they let each other go. Touchstone shakily groped around for his sword, but Sabriel lit a candle before he could cut his fingers in the dark. They looked at each other in the flickering light. Sabriel's eyes were wet, Touchstone's mouth bloody.
"What was that?"
Touchstone asked, huskily. "Astarael," replied Sabriel. "The final bell. It calls everyone who hears it into death."
"Kerrigor?"
"He'll come back," whispered Sabriel. He'll always come back, till his real body's destroyed. Your father? Touchstone mumbled. Mogget?
Dad's dead, said Sabriel. Her face was composed, but her eyes overflowed into tears. He'll go quickly beyond the final gate. Mogget? I don't know.
She fingered the silver ring on her hand, frowned, and bent to pick up the sword she'd taken from Touchstone.
Come on, she ordered. We have to get up to the West Yard. Quickly.
The West Yard? Asked Touchstone.
Retrieving his own sword, he was confused and sick, but he forced himself up.
Of the palace?
Yes, replied Sabriel. Let's go.
Chapter 24. The sunshine was harsh to their eyes, for it was surprisingly only a little past noon. They stumbled out onto the marble steps of the cave, blinking like nocturnal animals prematurely flushed out of an underground warren. Sabriel looked around at the quiet, sunlit trees, the placid expanse of grass, the clogged fountain. Everything seemed so normal, so far removed from the crazed and twisted chamber of horrors that was the reservoir, deep beneath their feet. She looked at the sky, too, losing focus in the blue, retreating lines of clouds just edging about the fuzzy periphery of her vision. My father is dead, she thought. Gone forever.
The road winds around the southwestern part of Palace Hill, a voice said somewhere near her, beyond the blueness.
What?
The road! Up to the West Yard!
It was Touchstone talking. Sabriel closed her eyes, told herself to concentrate, to get a grip on the here and now. She opened her eyes and looked at Touchstone. He was a mess. Face blood-streaked from his bleeding lip, hair wet, plastered flat, armor and clothes darkly sodden. Water dripped down the sword he still held out, angled to the ground.
"You didn't tell me you were a prince," Sabriel said, in a conversational tone. She might have been commenting on the weather. Her voice sounded strange in her own ears, but she didn't have the energy to do anything about it.
"I'm not," Touchstone replied, shrugging.
He looked up at the sky while he spoke.
"The queen was my mother." But my father was an obscure northern noble who took up with her a few years after her consort's death. He was killed in a hunting accident before I was born. Look, shouldn't we be going to the West Yard?
I suppose so, Sabriel said dully. Father said there will be a paper wing waiting for us there, and the Clare to tell us where to go.
I see, said Touchstone.
He came closer and peered at Sabriel's vacant eyes, then took her unresisting and oddly floppy arm and steered her towards the line of beech trees that marked a path to the western end of the park. Sabriel walked obediently, increasing her pace as Touchstone sped up, till they were practically jogging. Touchstone was pushing on her arm with many backward glances, Sabriel moving with a sleepwalker's jerky animation. A few hundred yards from the ornamental caves, the beaches gave way to more lawn, and a road started up the side of Palace Hill, switchbacking twice to the top. The road was well paved, but the flagstones had pushed up or sunk down over two decades without maintenance, and there were some quite deep ruts and holes. Sabriel caught her foot in one and she almost fell, Touchstone just catching her. But this small shock seemed to break her from the effects of the larger shock, and she found a new alertness cutting through her dumb despair.
"Why are we running?"
"Those scavengers are following us," Touchstone replied shortly, pointing back through the park. "The ones who had the children at the gate."
Sabriel looked where he pointed, and sure enough, there were figures slowly moving through the beech-lined path. All nine were there, close together, laughing and talking. They seemed confident Sabriel and Touchstone could not escape them, and their mood looked to be that of casual beaters, easily driving their stupid prey to a definite end. One of them saw Sabriel and Touchstone watching, and used a gesture that distance made unclear, but was probably obscene. laughter carried to them, borne by the breeze. The men's intentions were clear, hostile. "I wonder if they deal with the dead," Sabriel said bleakly, revulsion in those words, "to do their deeds when sunlight lends its aid to the living."
"They mean no good, anyway," said Touchstone, as they set off again, building up from a fast walk to a jog.
"They have bows, and I bet they can shoot, unlike the villagers of Nesto."
"Yes," replied Sabriel. "I hope there is a paper wing up there."
She didn't need to expand upon what would happen if it wasn't. Neither of them were in any shape for fighting, or much charter magic, and 9 bowmen could easily finish them off, or capture them. If the men were working for Kerrigor, it would be capture, and the knife, down in the dark of the reservoir. The road grew steeper, and they jogged in silence, breath coming fast and ragged, with none to spare for words. Touchstone coughed, and Sabriel looked at him with concern, till she realized she was coughing too. The shape they were in, it might not take an arrow to finish matters. The hill would do it anyway.
"Not much further,"
Touchstone gasped as they turned at the switchback, tired legs gaining a few seconds of relief on the flat before starting the next incline. Sabriel started to laugh, a bitter, coughing laugh, because it was still a lot further. The laugh became a shocked cry, as something struck her in the ribs like a sucker punch. She fell sideways into Touchstone, carrying both of them down onto the hard flagstones. A long-shot arrow had found its mark.
"Sabriel!"
Touchstone shouted, voice high with fear and anger. He shouted her name again, and then Sabriel suddenly felt charter magic explode into life within him. As it grew, he leapt up and thrust his arms out and down towards the enemy, towards that over-gifted marksman. 8 small suns flowered at his fingertips, grew to the size of his clenched fists, and shot out, leaving white trails of afterimage in the air. A split second later, a scream from below testified to their finding at least 1 target. Numbly, Sabriel wondered how Touchstone could possibly still have the strength for such a spell. Wonder became surprise as he suddenly bent and lifted her up, pack and all, cradling her in his arms, all in one easy motion. She screamed a little as the arrow shifted in her side, but Touchstone didn't seem to notice. He threw his head back, roared out an animal-like challenge, and started to run up the road, gathering speed from an ungainly lurch to an inhuman sprint. Froth burst from his lips, blowing out over his chin and onto Sabriel. Every vein and muscle in his neck and face corded out, and his eyes wild with unseeing energy. He was berserk, and nothing could stop him now save total dismemberment. Sabriel shivered in his grasp and turned her face into his chest, too disturbed to look on the savage, snorting face that bore so little resemblance to the Touchstone she knew. But at least he was running away from the enemy. On he ran, leaving the road, climbing over the tumbled stones of what had once been a gateway, hardly pausing, jumping from one rock to another with goat-like precision. His face was as bright red as a fire engine now, the pulse in his neck beating as fast as a hummingbird's wings. Sabriel, forgetting her own wound in sudden fear that his heart would burst, started shouting at him, begging him to come out of the rage.
"Touchstone, we're safe! Put me down! Stop! Please, stop!"
He didn't hear her, his whole concentration bent on their path. Through the ruined gateway he ran, on along a walled path, nostrils wide, head darting from side to side like a scent-following hound.
"Touchstone! Touchstone!"
Sabriel sobbed, beating on his chest with her hands.
"We've got away! I'm all right! Stop! Stop!"
Still he ran, through another arch, along a raised way, the stones falling away under his feet, down a short stair, jumping, gaping holes. A closed door halted him for a moment, and Sabriel breathed a sigh of relief, but he kicked at it viciously, till the rotten wood collapsed and he could back through, carefully shielding Sabriel from splinters. Beyond the door was a large open field, bordered by tumble-down walls. Tall weeds covered the expanse, with the occasional stunted, self-sown tree rising above them. right at the western edge, perched where a wall had long since crumbled down the hill. There were two paper wings, one facing south and the other north, and two people, indistinct silhouettes, bordered with the flaming orange of the afternoon sun that was sinking down behind them. Touchstone broke into a gait that could only be described as a gallop, parting the weeds like a ship ploughing a Sargasso sea. He ran right up to the two standing figures, gently placed Sabriel on the ground before them, and fell over, eyes rolling back to whiteness, limbs twitching. Sabriel tried to crawl over to him, but the pain in her side suddenly bit, sharp and deadly, so it was all she could do to sit up and look at the two people, and beyond them, the paper wings.
"Hello," they said in unison. "We are, for the moment, the Clare. You must be the Abhorsen and the King."
Sabriel stared, dry-mouthed. The sun was in her eyes, making it hard for her to see them clearly. Young women, both, with long blonde hair and bright, piercing blue eyes. They wore white linen dresses with long, open sleeves. Freshly pressed dresses that made Sabriel feel extremely dirty and uncivilized in her reservoir-soaked breeches and sweaty armor. Like their voices, their faces were identical. Very pretty. Twins. They smiled and knelt down, one by Sabriel's side, the other by Touchstone's. Sabriel felt charter magic slowly welling up in them, like water rising in a spring. Then it flowed into her, taking away the hurt and pain of the arrow. Next to her, Touchstone's breath became less labored, and he sank into the easy quiet of sleep.
"Thank you," croaked Sabriel.
She tried to smile, but seemed to have lost the knack of it.
"There are slavers, human allies of the dead, behind us. We know," said the duo, "but they are 10 minutes behind. Your friend, the King, ran very, very fast. We saw him run yesterday, or tomorrow."
"Ah," said Sabriel, laboriously pushing herself up onto her feet, thinking of her father and what he had said about the Clare, confusing their whens. Best to find out what she needed to know before things got really confusing. "Thank you," she said again, for the arrow fell on the ground as she fully straightened up. It was a hunting arrow, narrow-headed, not an armor-punching bodkin. They had only meant to slow her down. She shivered and felt the hole between the armor plates. The wound didn't feel healed exactly, just older, as if it had struck a week ago, instead of minutes.
"Father said you would be here, that you have been watching for us, and watching for where Kerrigor has his body."
"Yes," replied the Clare.
"Well, not us, exactly. We've only been allowed to be the Clare today, because we're the best paperwing pilots." "Or actually, Rael is,"
one of the twins said, pointing at the other.
"But since you would need a paper wing to fly home in, two paper wings were needed, so..."
"Sanaa came too," Rael continued, pointing back at her sister.
"Both of us," they chorused. "Now there isn't much time. You can take the red and gold paper wing. We painted it in the royal colors when we knew last week. But first, there's Kerrigor's body."
"Yes," said Sabriel. "Her father's, her family's, the kingdom's enemy, for her to deal with, her burden, no matter how heavy and how feeble her shoulders currently felt, she had to bear it."
"His body is in Anseltier," said the twins, "but our vision is weak across the wall, so we don't have a map, or know the place names. We'll have to show you, and you'll have to remember."
"Yes," agreed Sabriel, feeling like a dull student, promising to deal with the question quite beyond her.
"Yes."
The Clare nodded and smiled again. Their teeth were very white and even. One, possibly Rael, Sabriel had already got them confused, brought a bottle made of clear green glass out from the flowing sleeve of her robe, the telltale flash of charter magic showing it hadn't been there before. The other woman, Sanaa, produced a long ivory wand out of her sleeve.
Ready?
They asked each other simultaneously, and
yes,
before their question had even penetrated Sabriel's tired brain. Rael unstoppered the bottle with a resonant pop, and in one quick motion poured out the contents along a horizontal line. Sanaa, equally quickly, drew the wand across the falling water, and it froze in mid-air to form a pane of transparent ice, a frozen window suspended in front of Sabriel. Watch, commanded the women, and Sanaa tapped the ice window with her wand. It clouded over at that touch, briefly showed a scene of whirling snow, a glimpse of the wall, then steadied into a moving vision, much like a film shot from a travelling car. Wyverley College had frowned on films, but Sabriel had been to see quite a few in Bane. This was much the same, but in colour, and she could hear natural sounds as clearly as if she were there. The window showed typical Anselstieran farmland, a long field of wheat, ripe for the harvest, with a tractor stopped in the distance, its driver chatting with another man perched atop a cart, his two draft horses standing stolidly, peering out through their blinkers. The view raced closer towards these two men, veered around them with a snatch of court conversation, and continued, following a road, up and over a hill, through a small wood, and up to a crossroads, where the gravel intersected with a macadamized route of greater importance. There was a sign there, and the eye, or whatever it was, zoomed up to it, till the signpost filled the whole of the ice window. Wyverley, 2.5 miles, it read, directing travellers along the major road, and they were off again, shooting down towards Wyverley village. A few seconds later, the moving image slowed, to show the familiar houses of Wyverley village, the blacksmith-come-mechanics shop, the Wyvern public house, the constable's trim house with the blue lantern, all landmarks known to Sabriel. She concentrated even more carefully, for surely the vision, having shown her a fixed point of reference, would now race off to parts of Anselstier which were unknown to her. But the picture still moved slowly. At a walking pace, it went through the village and turned off the road, following a bridle path up the forested hill known as Docky Point. A nice enough hill, to be sure, covered by a cork tree plantation, with some quite old trees. Its only point of interest was the rectangular cairn upon the hilltop. The cairn. The image changed, closing in on the huge grey-green stones, square-cut and tightly packed together. A relatively recent folly, Sabriel remembered, from their local history lessons. A little less than 200 years old. She'd almost visited it once, but something had changed her mind. The image changed again, somehow sinking through the stone, down between the lines of mortar, zigzagging around the blocks, to the dark chamber at its heart. For an instant, the ice window went completely dark, then light came. A bronze sarcophagus lay under the cairn, metal crawling with free magic perversions of charter marks. The vision dodged these shifting marks, penetrated the bronze. A body lay inside, a living body, wreathed in free magic. The scene shifted, moving with jagged difficulty to the face of the body, a handsome face that swam closer and closer into focus. A face that showed what Kerrigor once had been. The human face of Rogier, his features clearly showing that he had shared a mother with Touchstone. Sabriel stared, sickened and fascinated by the similarities between the half-brothers. Then the vision suddenly blurred, spinning into greyness, greyness accompanied by rushing water, death. Something huge and monstrous was wading against the current, a jagged cutting of darkness, formless and featureless, save for two eyes that burned with unnatural flame. It seemed to see her beyond the ice window and lurched forward, two arms like blown storm clouds reaching forward.
Abhorsen's get! Screamed Kerrigor. Your blood will gush upon the stones!
His arm seemed about to come through the window, but suddenly the ice cracked, the pieces collapsing into a pile of swift, melting slush.
"You saw?"
the Clare said together. It wasn't a question. Sabriel nodded, shaking, her thoughts still on the likeness between Kerrigor's original human body and Touchstone. Where was the fork in their paths? What had put Rogier's feet on the long road that led to the abomination known as Kerrigor?
"We have 4 minutes," announced Sanar, "till the slavers come. We'll help you get the king to your paper wing, shall we?"
"Yes, please," replied Sabriel. Despite the fearsome sight of Kerrigor's raw spirit form, the vision had imbued her with a new and definite sense of purpose. Kerrigor's body was in Anselstier. She would find it and destroy it, and then deal with his spirit. But they had to get to the body first. The two women lifted Touchstone up, grunting with the effort. He was no lightweight at any time, and now was even heavier, still sodden with water from his ducking in the reservoir. But the Clare, despite their rather ethereal appearance, seemed to manage well enough.
"We wish you luck, cousin," they said,
as they walked slowly to the red and gold paper wing, balanced so close to the edge of the broken wall, the sere glistening, white and blue below.
"Cousin," Sabriel murmured. "I suppose we are cousins, of a sort, aren't we?" "Blood relatives, all the children of the Great Charters," the Clare agreed, "though the clan dwindles."
"Do you always know what is going to happen?" Sabriel asked, as they gently lowered Touchstone into the back of the cockpit and strapped him in with the belts normally used for securing luggage. Both the Clare laughed.
"No, thank the Charter. Our family is the most numerous of the bloodlines, and the gift is spread among many. Our visions come in snatches, and splinters, glimpses, and shadows. When we must, the whole family can spend its strength to narrow our sight, as it has done through us today. Tomorrow we will be back to dreams and confusion, not knowing where, when, or what we see. Now we have only 2 minutes."
Suddenly, they hugged Sabriel, surprising her with the obvious warmth of the gesture. She hugged them back, gladly, grateful for their care. With her father gone, she had no family left. But perhaps she would find sisters in the Clare. And perhaps Touchstone would be...
2 minutes,
repeated both the women, one in each ear. Sabriel let them go, and hurriedly took the Book of the Dead and the 2 charter magic books from her pack, wedging them down next to Touchstone's slightly snoring form. After a second's thought, she also stuffed in the fleece-lined oilskin and the boat cloak. Touchstone's swords went into the special holders next, but the pack and the rest of its contents had to be abandoned. "Next stop, the wall," Sabriel muttered as she climbed into the craft, trying not to think about what would happen if they had to land somewhere uncivilized in between. The Clare were already in their green and silver craft, and, as Sabriel did up her straps, she heard them begin to whistle, charter magic streaming out into the air. Sabriel licked her lips, summoned her breath and strength, and joined in. Wind rose behind both the craft, tossing black hair and blonde, lifting the paper wings' tails and jostling their wings. Sabriel took a breath after the wind whistling and stroked the smooth laminated paper of the hull. A brief image of the first paper wing came to mind, broken and burning in the depths of Whole Hallow.
"I hope we fare better together," she whispered,
before joining with the Clare to whistle the last note, the pure, clear sound that would wake the charter magic in their craft. A second later, 2 bright-eyed paper wings leapt out from the ruined palace of Belisaire, glided down almost to the swell in the Sea of Sare, then rose to circle higher and higher above the hill. 1 craft, of green and silver, turned to the northwest. The other, of red and gold, turned south Touchstone, waking to the rush of cold air on his face and the unfamiliar sensation of flying, groggily muttered, "What happened?"
"We're going to Anselstier," Sabriel shouted, "across the wall, to find Carrigor's body and destroy it."
"Oh!"